I'm Brian Russo, and welcome back to Coastal Connection. We've been discussing the results from the local and the national election, and as with any race, there are winners and there are losers. Here in Ocean City, Joe Hall has taken his lumps publicly for the past several months, undergoing large amounts of criticism, and he was unseated in Tuesday's election by quite a large margin, coming in seventh place out of 10 candidates. Joe Hall joins me here at the Park Recording Studio in Ocean City to talk about the campaign, the election, and what's next for him, both personally and politically. Joe, thanks for joining me here on Coastal Connection.
Oh, thank you, Brian. It's a pleasure. And you mentioned about winners and losers. I don't think anybody lost here. Ocean City won. It's a democratic process. We go through it every 2 years in Ocean City, and I think it's the way the voters get to come out and direct the town.
Yeah, and you know, this is, I believe, your seventh campaign. You've been on the winning side of these. You've been on the losing side. With this one, you know, did this one hurt any more than past elections?
I felt no pain. I had no regrets. Last night, being a veteran, I understand the machines and how they open up. And after the third machine, you know the tale. I went home and relaxed, took a shower, and went to bed.
Yeah,
it was okay. The voter spoke, and I didn't hang out at the election, the polls afterwards, because you know the winners are the ones that needed the attention. They're the ones that are going to be the voice of the people for the next couple of years, and that whole group will be on for 4 years. So it was their time for celebration and for the victory.
Yeah. In speaking with some people last night, some of those winners, they were, you know, they kind of made a note of the fact that you and council member or you and Jim Hall kind of ushered yourselves out the door after the third or fourth machine was read. Do you regret not, you know, at least congratulating the people who won, or will you extend them a call later on in the week? You know, speak to those criticisms about leaving early.
It's time for the criticisms to stop. We left because we understood what the results were. We wanted them to be able to celebrate with their family, friends, and supporters there. It wasn't our place to interject into their victory. It was a victory for Ocean City, a tremendous voter turnout. Everything that everybody wanted to happen in this election happened. I'm very comfortable that I was able to express my desires, visions, and evaluation of where the town is and where the town should go. They did the same. The voters chose, and that was what it was about. And not to mention that, unlike the six previous elections where we had the results by 8:30, it was 10:30 at night, and quite frankly, I rolled into Convention Center parking lot at 6:15 and didn't leave. So I was ready for bed. I left it all on the field, and it just wasn't my night for the spotlight. Yeah. It just wasn't.
You know, in the weeks prior to the election, you seemed very confident when I was speaking with you, and you felt like, you know, the voters really believed in, you know, the council majority's new direction and direction that you were, you know, taking the town on, that so-called conservative stance, closing the wallet. Did it surprise you that the voting base in Ocean City went the other way and they went, you know, in quite a large margin?
Trying to call an election is almost impossible. I got to network with a tremendous amount of citizens. I did over 750 doors. Obviously, I didn't get to each one that was an open door and talk to people, but I got to engage the people on the issues. I walked over 400 miles up and down Coastal Highway, waving and making myself available for people to pull over and talk to me, and they did, and they shared things. I got thumbs ups. I got thumbs downs. I got the number one that we all know that it's about, but you know, people were engaged in this election. Clearly the issues were discussed. I believe in my issues and how I expressed them. And so did the other side. I mean, yesterday was about the voters, not the candidates. And they spoke, And that's going to be the driving force. The new council will be the council that drives the town forward in the next couple of years. And I hopefully they will embrace David Recor and his initiatives. And together they will map out a winning plan for the town.
As you look back on your current or your past or most recent regime on the council, what's the thing you're most proud of as far as, you know, a policy that you instilled or a direction that the town has gone in, perhaps, you know, under, you know, your watch, so to speak?
Well, the most clear thing was is I think we have identified that Ocean City has come to a build-out point, and we now will become redevelopment and reinventing, you know, where 20 years prior we had lots of open raw land that needed to be developed and was developed, and the infrastructure to support that was implemented. We now, I think the most important thing was, is we identified that the town needs to have sustainable governance. And I even think the new candidates understand that. And they're all qualified. They've all served in the capacity of the town one way or the other. I think the town's going to be in fine hands. I feel all 10 candidates had the same goal. It's just like I've said, that the new group and my group had very different ideas on how to get there. Mm-hmm. And the other thing was is I felt the mandate for some change, and we powered through that change, as uncomfortable as it may have been. We followed through on doing that. And not many councils, they say a lot of things during the election, but once it's over, they don't follow through. So as ugly as some people may describe what happened, we powered through change, and I think it's for the betterment of the town of Ocean City.
What's next for Joe Hall? Are you going to continue to be a public figure in the political world and be a part of that conversation at a public level, or should people expect for you to be much more introverted and kind of be below the radar after this many years of being in the public eye?
Well, I mean, like we've talked before, I've had 6 elections. I had a gap in my service. I would say that I was low on the radar while I was out. I believe in the election process. The voters made a decision. Those are the leadership people that are at role, and I support that. I support them. So what I will do is it's no secret that, you know, issues in my life have been discussed publicly, whether I want them to or not. I got a lot of things to work on. Mm-hmm. I got a livelihood. I have young children I need to take care of. I have a business that needs to meet all the challenges that are put forward between local community and regulations and competition. So I've got plenty to do. Joe Hall will be busy. He will redefine himself. He'll fix what he can fix. He'll accept what he can't, and he'll continue to live life large in Ocean City.
Your ideology about how the town should move forward is vastly different than the folks who were elected last evening. So with all that said, are you hopeful that this direction that the town will go in moving forward is one that you think that the residents and the visitors will all thrive in, yourself included, with your own small business?
I think Ocean City survives in spite of itself. We're a 1-mile-wide, 10-mile-wide long island that is situated within driving distance of over 80 million people. We're going to survive no matter what any council can do in a 2-year, 4-year period. So I have total faith. We've been blessed by being hopscotched by storms. We're uniquely blessed in Ocean City. It's why I call it my hometown. What I found out through the storm of Sandy was that not only is Ocean City the best beach resort in the world, but it's the best hometown resort. Because when there's an issue, whether it's an ill person in your neighborhood, a devastating fire, or a major national storm, we step up. No matter what, we'll survive.
That was outgoing Ocean City Councilmember Joe Hall speaking with me at the Park Recording Studio earlier this week. Another man who just finished a rough and tumble election season is U.S. Senator Tom Carper of Delaware. But in Carper's case, the end of the campaign brought a big victory. Carper, a Democrat, got 66% of the vote. Republican Kevin Wade got 29%. Dewey Beach businessman and independent candidate Alex Pires just got under 4%. And Green Party candidate Andrew Groff captured less than 1%. The campaign was notable for a number of reasons, including the harsh personal attacks Pires launched against the incumbent. And in a conversation the day after the election with Coastal Connection's Tara Boyle, Senator Carper said it was, quote, a very sweet day.
It's interesting to me that this is your 13th consecutive statewide victory, if I'm correct on that, which is a Delaware record. And this campaign, as you know, was certainly a negative one on the part of the independent candidate, Alex Pires. What's your takeaway? I mean, what will you remember from the actual campaigning of this campaign?
Actually, what I remember is how little the campaign focused on real issues. How do we turn a middling economic recovery into a more vibrant economic recovery? How do we rein in the budget deficit? What's the best approach and pros and cons of the Bowles-Simpson Deficit Commission recommendations, which I favor? How do we actually get better health care results for less money? Or how do we get better results on almost everything that the federal government's involved in for less money? And what kind of energy policy should we have as a country? And should we be rely more on natural gas, less on coal, more on nuclear? What's the right mix here? Conservation, how important is that? I found that those issues were almost lost in so the pure created by one of my opponents who just to throw bombs and which really had no basis in fact. And I think to take a word from the Biden-Ryan debate, malarkey, a lot of malarkey. And I think at the end of the day, Delaware voters they're pretty smart, and they saw it for what it was. I've never seen somebody spend so much money in a campaign and get so few votes, actually less than 4%. It's pretty amazing.
Journalists in Washington have pretty much already switched gears and are now talking a lot about the fiscal cliff and, you know, whether that will get addressed in the lame duck session. What are your thoughts about what could be accomplished over the next few months on that issue or other issues during the lame duck?
Well, I think it was Rahm Emanuel who used to say, never waste a good crisis. This is a good crisis in the terms that there's a lot of stake, and frankly, I don't think many of us, if any of us, want to see our country go off that fiscal cliff. So there's a lot of impetus to try to work hard and find an agreement to put us back on a fiscally responsible path.
Right, and I know you've talked a lot about building bridges, although the makeup of the House and the Senate staying pretty much as they were. What does that mean realistically for what the two chambers as well as what the president will be able to accomplish together?
Yeah, I think what's been missing, just to take the issue of the fiscal cliff and a path to get us back to a more fiscally responsible position. One of the reasons why our economic recovery hasn't been more robust, and there are several reasons, including what's going on in Europe, but one of the reasons is businesses need certainty, predictability, and frankly, they don't have a lot of it. We've come through this terrible recession, and businesses would love to know for sure that we can govern. Can we be fiscally responsible? Can we provide certainty with respect to the tax code instead of all the uncertainty that prevails right now? And we need to address those uncertainties, and if we did, I think the economy would take off.
That was Democratic U.S. Senator Tom Carper of Delaware speaking with Coastal Connection's Tara Boyle. Back in September, we introduced you to Richard and Jessica Johnson during our Living the Dream series. They're an Oxford couple who are preparing for a year-long sailing adventure around the world with their daughters. The family sets sail on their catamaran Elsie next week, and we've asked Richard and Jessica to keep a monthly audio diary of their travels on the high seas. We'll bring you the first of those diaries today as the family gets ready to depart for the Caribbean.
Hello, this is Richard Johnson on Elsie, and we're getting close to departure. We're going to take the next year and sail to New Zealand, basically in 10 legs. The first leg is going to take us to St. Thomas in the Virgin Islands, and it's probably one of the more challenging legs of the trip.
So we'll have 8 people on board for this first leg heading south. There'll be our family of 4. which is Richard, myself, our two daughters who are 9 and 11 years old. Then we have a young woman who is 22 years old who's joining us for the entire trip. And then we have a couple joining us from Estonia, and they sort of want to experience offshore sailing. I think they aspire to purchasing a blue water cruising boat of their own. So I'm here talking to Molly, and Molly is one of our deckhands. She's 9. And Molly, you're getting ready to go on a long trip. So how are you feeling about heading out into the ocean on Elsie?
I don't want to leave my friends here, but I also want to go on all these adventures and swim in coral reefs.
So you sailed about 10,000 miles back from New Zealand with your family on Elsie, and now you're heading out again. What are some of the things that you've learned from living on a sailboat?
I've learned how to tie some knots and what direction north, south, east, west is in. And I have learned lots how to sail a sailboat.
So let's take it up. Let's take the dinghy up on the jib halyard. So if you slack it off, I'll go hook it up.
All right, going up. Well, I'm looking around the bridge deckhouse right now, and even though we're only about 10 days away from departure, it doesn't exactly look like a boat ready to go to sea. It pretty much works out that it all just kind of comes down to the last minute.
Thanks for calling Verizon.
Have you made the other calls yet?
I think I got everything done. Let me see. We got the Netflix canceled. The New York Times subscription, that's gone. We've checked in with the car and home insurance. We have the boat insurance to deal with tomorrow.
So Molly, when you're living on the boat, you don't have a very big bedroom, and you live in a cabin that you share with your sister, and you have a bunk. Can you describe what it's like to live in a cabin on a boat?
First of all, our mattresses feel like they're made of concrete, which my dad likes to say, a slab of concrete. And it's kind of small, but me and my sister, Emma, decorate it with lots of posters, and I have a bulletin board with calendars and all this other stuff.
You get to see a lot of the sky in the daytime and in the nighttime. Is there any favorite time that you'd like to be out on deck and look at the sky?
I sometimes might sleep outside and look at the stars at night when we're anchored.
Sometimes the most relaxing time is once you cast off the dock lines and you can kind of get into your shipboard routine. Yeah, there's lots of things to pay attention to, and you look forward to getting underway.
That was Jessica, Richard, and Molly Johnson in the first of a year-long series of audio diaries they'll share with us from their travels around the world. You're listening to Coastal Connection here on 88.3 in Ocean City, Maryland. I'm Brian Russo.